Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Jamie Williams, Wealth Advisor with Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94, between Highway 164 and Highway F. We're in Ridgeview Corporate Park and also located in the Village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building across from the well-known Winkies. We also service clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. Please visit ellenbecker.com for more details. Today on Money Sense, we'd like to welcome our very own Heather Deaton. Heather, welcome to Money Sense.
Thanks, Jamie. Great to be here.
So I've had the pleasure of working here and serving as a wealth advisor with you for all of my time here, several years. Heather is a CFP, which is a certified financial planner and wealth advisor. And Heather has a great deal of experience in the area of philanthropy and education when it comes to, you know, giving knowledge to individuals, nonprofits, outright volunteerism. And today, the focus of our show is the concept of the four T's. So with the four T's are time, talent, treasure, and ties. So Heather, I know that you've spent quite a great deal of time understanding these immense area of topic and very valuable because it's in our culture here at EIG. Let's start with talking about these four items and begin with treasure. What does that mean?
Thanks so much, Jamie. Yeah, and you know, giving back and serving and building community, that's all part of my core values as well as the core values here at Ellenbecker Investment Group. And so there's different ways to just think about how it is you're giving back. And again, that's those four T's. So because this is Money Sense and it's a financial-based show that, of course, always covers the whole person and outside things other than just finance, we did still think that we would start with the treasure aspect. So there's many ways to give financial, assets to charitable organizations or nonprofits. And there's really efficient ways to do that from a tax perspective. So, of course, we always give from our hearts. We give because we want to. We support that organization's mission. We have, resources that we want to put towards the community. And if we can do that and have some tax savings along the way, that makes it even better.
100%.
So there's just a few things. I'll hit some of the highlights. We've talked about this on the show. Only a handful of months ago, I was on the show for just about tax-efficient giving. So we'll, again, just kind of hit the highlights on this one. But one of the tools that can be used to get a better tax break than just donating every year to nonprofits is to try to bundle those donations and do maybe an every other year or every few years gift. So one way you can do that is just give to your organizations, double one year and don't give anything the next year. Why would we do that from a tax perspective? Is that you are going to likely take the standard deduction most years unless you have a big charitable gift. In today's tax laws, which are, you know, under consideration this year, right, given where the sunset clause is from the 2017 Tax Cut and Jobs Act. If you only take what you might be itemizing, you're probably not getting above that super high standard deduction. So if you double or tripled or quadrupled your charitable giving in 1 year, you likely would break above, if you're charitably minded, you would break above that standard deduction. So then you would actually get some bang for your buck on the donations from a tax perspective. So one way to do that, like I said, is to just increase what you give to organizations in a given tax year. And then the next year, you would scale that back or possibly do zero. And you could inform your organizations and let them know why you're taking that year off because you doubled up the year before.
Yeah, so there's a way to do a direct gift to the organization. That's a 501c3 type organization,
yes.
Right? A nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And so people, I think, can just do an outright gift, but there's some other fancy ways too that
there
really
are
work well.
Right. So when we're talking about basically giving cash gifts, that's one way to give cash gifts. Another way to do that is to, instead of bundling and giving directly to the organizations, like say every other year or every third year, even, you could open up a donor advised fund. That is a very specific investment type account at a sponsoring organization that sponsoring organization, it's a foundation typically, they've got 501c3 status. So if you open up this donor advised fund, you open up an account with them and you give an irrevocable gift into that fund, from there, then you can recommend where those funds go.
Sure.
So that's a way, again, to take a few years worth of giving and put it into this account at one time. You get a single deduction that year for that one large gift, or if you spread it across the year, that's fine. But if you build that fund up, you get the tax break for the gift in the year that you put it into that fund. From there, every time you take money out and donate it to charity, you're not getting a second tax break on that. So it's a really simple way to do this, like bundling. It also just simplifies what your giving is overall, because you don't have to keep a bunch of different acknowledgement letters or receipts of charitable donations. You just keep that one that goes it to open up or to fund that donor advised fund. A lot of clients look at that as a way to build up a nest egg of charitable giving for their family. Yeah. If they were to pass away, you can put a succession plan on that as well.
We almost call it like a setting up your own personal like foundation almost, right?
Almost,
in the name of your family, you can kind of direct it as you see fit. And it's really interesting though, because we kind of think about, you know, from my perspective, because this is something that I really have been embracing for our clients over the last few years as well. But just to think that we have taxable, tax deferred, tax-free, which so that would be like your traditional IRA, your Roth, maybe a brokerage account titled in a trust or a TOD or something like that, which stands for something called transfer on death. But anyway, going into that further, the donor advised fund is almost like a fourth like bucket of portfolio assets, right? So kind of what happens once that money gets in there?
So the money gets in there, it can be invested. You can set how aggressively or safely you want it invested. And then from there, again, you can recommend grants to come out of that fund to go to specific organizations. I'm using the word recommend very specifically because this is an asset that you have given away. So you have a lot of guidance on it and some control, but wherever you open up that donor advised fund, you just want to make sure you know any kind of rules that sponsoring organization may have. Mm-hmm. They may have minimum grant amounts. They may have minimum balances. They do charge a fee because, again, they've got a lot of they have a lot of things they need to take care of as a nonprofit or a 501c3 organization themselves.
Yeah, it's an amazing way to leave a legacy, too.
It is. You know, another thing that you can do on a tax play, right? We're talking a lot of the tax plays. Again, give from your heart, but if we can choose what to do based on taxes and to give you a break on that, that's even better. But if you've got something that has maybe grown in value significantly, so it's a highly appreciated stock or highly appreciated investment, you can give that to an organization, a nonprofit organization, and you that way you avoid selling it to create cash, because if you have a highly appreciated, that's a lot of profit in that investment.
Right.
If you give it as is, you have not sold it, so you do not incur the gain or the profit, thus you are not going to have taxes on that gain or profit. The nonprofit takes it in, they sell it, there's a gain there, but nonprofits don't pay taxes. That's part of the 501c3 designation. So that's called donating highly appreciated securities. Most organizations will have a broker they work with to take incoming stock donations. So you would just ask your nonprofit or look on their website how to transfer stocks or shares of securities to them. You can do that with stocks, mutual funds, many things like that. We can talk a little bit more about that after our break, too.
Yes. You've been listening to Money Sense. Today, our guest is Heather Deaton, wealth advisor and certified financial planner with Ellen Becker Investment Group. We're talking about what we call the four T's of charitable giving. And specifically, we've been talking about one of those four T's, starting off with the idea of giving something of value, whether it's a donation of cash, funds, you know, from maybe your portfolio that have some certain tax consequences. So with that, Heather and I are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Money Sense. This is Jamie Williams, wealth advisor with Ellen Becker Investment Group, and we're here with Heather, my colleague here, a fellow financial planner at EIG. Before the break, we were talking about the concept of charitable giving and the four T's. We were talking about one specifically, treasure. And Heather, you know, we had started to talk about the idea or concept of giving highly appreciated stock or securities. Let's maybe give an example of what that what would that look like for someone.
Yeah, thank you, Jamie. That would look like if you bought, maybe you bought shares of Apple from a long time ago, or maybe you recently, maybe you bought shares of Palantir not that long ago, maybe over a year ago though, and you bought it at a very low price, and that stock has taken off. So you've got what's called a capital gain embedded in that. In that asset of yours, in that holding, in that security, sure. You have a high gain. If you sell that to create cash to do anything, to buy a car, to fund, you know, your spending, to give to charity, you're going to have a profit. That's that capital gain that gets taxed at somewhere between 15% and 20% for most people, and that goes through your tax return. You'll end up paying taxes on it as they're owed. If you don't sell it, but you give it away, so you take X number of shares of Apple or Palantir and you give that to a nonprofit, then you get a charitable deduction for the value of that stock on the date of the gift. Again, now remember, you haven't sold it, so you have not incurred any kind of gain.
Right.
You did give a gift, and so you do get that charitable deduction. So let's say you gift, you know, $10,000 of Apple stock, then you would have a $10,000 tax deduction. The organization takes that in, they sell it, they can use that to fund their operations, they can use their use it for their programming, whatever they want to do with it.
Right.
And you're not passing the tax to them because the nonprofits don't pay taxes. If you had sold $10,000 of Apple to pay the tax and you have a $9,500 taxable gain on that because you bought it so long ago,
right.
You know, you're going to owe taxes on that. So it avoids taxes for you from the avoiding the capital gains. No matter what, you still get that tax deduction of the $10,000, whether you gave cash or securities. But more efficiently is to just give this, the shares.
Most definitely.
Before the break, I was also talking about donor advised funds. And how you can give a lot, you know, give a gift to that fund that you still kind of have most control over. You can also fund that with highly appreciated securities.
Yeah.
So again, if you don't have a nonprofit you want to give a whole bunch to, or you don't, your nonprofit doesn't take in, you know, highly appreciated security, they don't take in stocks or mutual fund shares, you could open a donor advised fund and you could gift it that way.
That's a great way. And
And there are some other tax limits about how much you can gift in a given year compared to your adjusted gross income. They're high, you know, they're like 60% or 50% depending on what you're funding. That would be something to talk to your tax advisor about if it's really getting up there into where you think you're getting to, you know, over half of your adjusted gross income that you're trying to gift in 1 year. There's going to be some, you know, pushing forward of some of that tax deduction if you go above those percentages.
Fantastic. That's a great concept for many people to consider.
Right. You know, other pieces around that from, again, we're focusing on the tax side of things right now. If you have an IRA, which many people do, it's either, you know, from rolling over from a 401k, from funding it, you know, while they were working. If you are, you know, if you are over age 70 and a half, you can actually take funds. You can take cash. You could take securities if you really chose to. You could take funds out of your IRA and give those to charity. And that's going to count. That's not going to count towards your taxable income. An IRA has grown tax deferred since you put the money in, whenever that was.
Sure.
You know, for somebody who's 70 and a half, it could have been 45 years ago.
Absolutely.
Right? Could have had all that growth on there. And if you take any withdrawals from an IRA, that is going to be taxed as income to you in the year you take it out. It's going to look just like income because you've never paid tax on anything that went into that, and you've never paid tax on the growth yet. So all of it's taxable when you take a withdrawal. Unless that withdrawal goes directly from the IRA to charity and you are over 70 and a half years old. So that's called a qualified charitable distribution, a QCD. You know, I know here at Ellenbecker,
awesome.
We, all of us advisors, work with our clients on facilitating that all of the time because it is money that's not been taxed yet and, in fact, will never be taxed because you've used it to go to charity. And when you think about just, again, tax-efficient ways of giving, investing, spending, right? We're going to look at all those different components. So that's one way that you can, again, really feel good about what you're giving. So I tell all my clients, once they're 70 and a half, like, don't gift out of your checking account anymore, because
right.
everything that has gone in your checking account, your pension, your Social Security, your IRA withdrawals, those have all been taxed once it's in your account, basically. It's going to go through your tax return. So let's take it straight from the IRA.
Yeah, that's one thing that I have really noticed for many people. They kind of build up their certain, you know, kind of list of charitable organizations that they like to support throughout the year. A big one for many people is their church.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they might do some weekly or monthly type gifting. The IRA has proven to be a really good way to do that for a lot of people because
right.
they might just bunch their giving in
yeah.
one year, in one contribution, or maybe two throughout the year. But I'll tell you, a lot of the custodians out there, you know, that help manage these portfolios from a standpoint of where you hold the assets, they've made it easy, haven't they?
They've
made it easier for people to do this.
Right. You know, where our accounts are held, they can actually get a checkbook. You can get check writing against your IRA. Just work closely with your advisor to make sure that the right amount of cash is in that IRA, so the checks will clear without a problem. But that's
yep.
been very easy. And it's important to work with your tax advisor that they know anything that goes to charity directly out of your IRA, your tax advisor, your CPA needs to know so that they report it correctly on your return as a non-taxable withdrawal. So that's really important. Then, you know, fast forward a few years and if you've hit your required minimum distribution age, so right now that's 73.
Mm-hmm.
For people born after 1960 or 1960 or later, it's going to be 75. So, you know, if you are in required minimum distribution or RMD status, you can do those QCDs, those qualified charitable distributions. Again, go straight from the IRA to charity, and it will count towards your required minimum. So you can start doing that charitable giving, you know, a couple years before you actually hit your RMD status, because that starts at 70 and a half. But just knowing that as part of your gifting and your tax strategy, you know, the required minimum distribution, that RMD, that whole thing is so the IRS can get and the state can get their tax money, right? They
right.
don't want
Whether
things growing.
Whether you need it or not,
yeah.
there's a factor. You have to take out a certain amount.
Right.
Some people get confused about that, you know, but we can recycle it. Or maybe we gift it.
Yeah, yeah. There's different strategies yeah. around how to do that. But anyway, but that's one of the things, again, from the longevity of portfolios and just really starting to look at that as a where's the best way to give from.
Absolutely.
I say it again, right? Give from your heart, but let's
yeah.
make it make sense.
Most definitely. So those two are great. And I think the qualified charitable distribution strategy has been extremely important for a lot of charities to receive these funds. And I think, like, exactly what I referenced when I introduced you today, Heather, education is so key. I found that many nonprofits, if they offer it or explain it to their, you know, the people that support these organizations, it could really have a great, profound impact.
Well, and that's something that I've done, you know, educational seminars for nonprofits to educate either their staff, right, their staff or their fundraising professionals, or even to have a specific seminar for their donors so their donors understand some of these pieces, because not everyone has an advisor that focuses on this. Not everyone, you know, maybe thinks about it in that way, especially given some tax changes where, you know, it doesn't feel like you get that much of a tax benefit in charitable giving now because of how high the standard deduction is. But, you know, just that education. So I've done that for several different nonprofits and also, you know, in front of groups of fundraising professionals to just educate them on the topics I just went over and more.
What a great thing. I love that. And Heather, I think so many people are going to appreciate that. Thanks for the work that you're doing. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. You're listening to Money Sense. Welcome back to Money Sense. Having a great conversation here with Heather Deaton from Ellenbecker Investment Group, my fellow colleague, wealth advisor, and we've been talking about charitable giving and the four T's. We spent quite a bit of time talking about the treasure aspect of this, which is structuring your portfolio in a way that allows you to get some tax benefits and give from the heart, right? Heather, let's talk a little bit more about actual, like, if you're not in a position to do treasure, maybe you can donate something like time.
Time, yeah. And in addition to treasure, right?
Right.
All have something to give, and time is one of those things that, you know, looking at it from a how to become involved in an organization. So, you know, thinking about where your real values are and what missions tug at you. And if you want to become involved, it's a great way to get to know an organization. It's a great way for an organization to get to know you. So that is where it is volunteering your time. So some of the different ways to think about it is, you know, maybe you go to the organization's volunteer days. Many organizations will have specific days for volunteering. You could look at events that are happening, and maybe you work on an event. We do different things here as a organization for our employees, where every employee gets 8 hours of paid time to take off to go work at nonprofits and volunteer their time. Maybe it's 2 hours a week at their children's school. Maybe it's a whole workday out on a farm, you know, that benefits, you know, for like Hunger Task Force or Fondy Food Center, working on the farm or doing cleanup projects around Milwaukee or the surrounding area for nonprofits that need that kind of time. We've also done where we've made fleece tie blankets for, you know, the Humane Society here or the Haws organization. So there's a lot of different ways to just without talent is a whole nother T. We'll get to that in a second. But this is more straight up just going and helping with the mission.
Absolutely.
Right? Doing things that that organization needs you to do. You know, I'm on the board for Fondy Food Center. We're in Milwaukee. We have a farmer's market that needs to be, you know, have some beautification every year, right? Where we need to paint some of the stalls for the farmers. We need to clean up. We need to do weeding. Lots of things like that really can take a lot of time, and that this is a way to help the organization, because whatever volunteers don't do, paid staff has to do.
Sure.
A nonprofit is typically, right, on a bit of a shoestring budget and really trying to make the most of the treasure that comes in from donors and from foundations. So that's one of the pieces to think about. It also helps you to see how that organization functions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you can feel a bit more confident in giving, whether you're giving treasure or time or talent or ties that we'll get to. One of the places to look would be, if you don't even know where to start, would be maybe like Volunteer Match. That's a online website where you can find volunteer opportunities that are, you know, kind of posted there. You can look out on social media. You know, just really making sure that any of these places that you choose to go to are you know, legitimate places that you want to be involved in. United Way has a great resource. You know, there's the local giving guide. Those are different ways to learn about the organizations and to learn about the volunteer opportunities there too. So I think that time is something that, as a working person, right? So prior to retirement, it's a great way to feel like you've got some connection outside of your profession and outside of, say, just raising and growing your family. It's also a way to model for people around you, right? As leaders of an organization, it's a way to model and mentor younger people that are in your organization. It's a great way to model for your kids and grandkids too, that this is a piece that's important, is having connection to the community and giving back.
And family. We, in my time growing up, bringing up two boys in scouting,
there
was a lot that we did in terms of volunteering to build kind of like that idea and that culture around it. You mentioned earlier the employer-sponsored time off.
Yeah.
I think that's something that's so key to take advantage of, because it's something that I think people just think about. I'm going to do that eventually.
Right.
Well, pound a stake in the ground and look for that perfect fit. But getting back to one of the things you mentioned around retirement.
Exactly.
We talk a lot about people not knowing what they're going to do. Like, what does retirement look like? So if you could get a head start before you decide to fully retire and get affiliated, there's so many great organizations, and we always inspire our clients to retire to something, not from something.
Exactly. And that is one of the things that getting involved, even while you're still working, even while you're building your career, it's a great way to, kind of have that sense of community, build a network for yourself. Then, speaking of, going to retirement, then, sometimes people struggle with retirement going, what am I going to do every day? I'm done with the job, right? Mm-hmm. I'm done with that job. It's, suited you well. You've done what you need to do there. It's time to move on. You've worked hard, and now you're in charge of your own time. There's always a list of projects to do around the house, and eventually those do run out, right?
That's true.
And so having something else that keeps you in a routine and in a schedule, that's what a lot of our clients have told us has been what is finding what, how to spend their time and to how to go from this, whether it's a 9-to-5 or a 40 or a 50 or 60 week hour job that you used to do, down to having complete free reign over your time, after that honeymoon period of just being able to do what you choose to do. People want that structure, and volunteering is a great way to do that.
Sure is. On that end too, so many of these organizations require and need people to help step up from a standpoint of leadership.
Right.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
Well, and I kind of bucket that under the third T of talent, right?
Yep.
So you can use your talent. Now, granted, it may be leading the organization through some board work. It also might be using what your true expertise and skills are, whether that's being able to help with bookkeeping, being able to work on plumbing or landscaping, right? There's real talent and experience that you may have had in your professional career, again, whether you're working or retired, to be able to use those skills and donate those skills. That's going to really save organizations from having to hire out.
That's huge.
That's a big piece of it. When we think about being able to use our expertise, the board involvement, being a leader in the organization, right? That's another really important component. 501c3s have to have their board of directors. That's laid out in their bylaws. There's a lot of very specific things in getting and keeping that 501c3 status, making sure they do all the proper filings like the Form 990, that they have their audits up to date. There's a lot of governance in the background and that are really holding up these organizations, and they need our help. They need your help, right? They need
brains, brawn,
all of the things. But that's where I had mentioned about starting with volunteering time is where you can really get kind of a peek into the organization before you take on a larger role, perhaps, right? Before you take on a larger role, especially if you're new to being in the board of directors. I've been on a couple of boards. I mentioned previously that I'm on the board. I'm the president of the board for Fondi Food Center. And that understanding where your responsibilities start and end is really important, so you just know what to expect. You know, it's a great way to learn more of the behind the scenes and what the even bigger challenges and opportunities and successes of an organization are is by being on that board.
Absolutely. I know it's something that here at EIG we fully embrace. We have the show MPC, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, that airs every week as well. I know between our own charitable organization, EIG Charitable Foundation, we try to do a lot of good work there too. And having been here now for several years, it's really opened my eye up to the possibilities of participating and serving on a small board as well. So we've been meeting with Heather Deaton. We've been talking about a lot of great concepts here relative to giving, you know, whether it's time, talent, treasure. And when we get back from the break, we're going to talk about connecting, ties, and some other concepts. So with that, we'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Money Sense. This is Jamie Williams here with Heather Deaton, my colleague. We're talking about a great topic today, charitable giving. Before the break, we were talking about talent and time, how that works into what people might consider as a means to assist. Why don't we pick up with where we left off on the concept of talent and move on from there?
Well, and I just wanted to be able to touch a little bit on the responsibility and things to look for if you were considering joining the board of directors for a nonprofit organization. It's a great way to use it's a great way to use your time. It's a great way to really help grow and sustain the organization that you have committed your time to.
Sure.
There are some things to be aware of, though, when you start thinking about it, when leadership approaches you for the conversation about being on the board, or if you approach them. There's a very specific fiduciary duty. Now, we as advisors and as CFPs, you know, we have a duty of a fiduciary duty to our clients.
Yep.
As a board member, you have a fiduciary duty to the organization. What does that mean? That means that you've got to support and hold the duty of care. So that is making sure that you exercise, you know, ordinary and reasonable care in the best interest of that nonprofit. So making sure that you're aware of any kind of conflicts of interest with you, other board members, staff members, organizations, donors, foundations that are supporting the organization. So having that lens and holding that ahead of all things else. There's also the duty of like loyalty or like a faithfulness to that nonprofit. So not doing anything untoward to the mission of the organization or taking what you've learned by being on that board and doing something negative with it, right? You want to have that duty of loyalty, again, in the best interest of the nonprofit ahead of your own at all time, or removing yourself from the board or from certain responsibilities if you can't hold that true. You know, a conflict of interest doesn't mean that it's an all or nothing. You know, we have that in our work. If we have a conflict of interest, the most important thing is to acknowledge it and report it and then make that plan around it. Other pieces is like a duty of obedience. That's really making sure that you refer out where you don't have the expertise. So listening to the auditor, if they tell you there's a problem with the financial bookkeeping, instead of brushing that off or thinking that you know better, even though you're not the outside auditor. The other piece of it too is that, you know, there's some liability risk that you take on as being part of the leadership of a nonprofit organization, any organization really.
Sure.
And you just want to make sure that they've got the proper liability insurance in place so they can protect their directors and officers from any excess liability, from if there were to be any kind of lawsuit with that organization that you're not personally held responsible. And again, being able to just know and pay attention and do that, again, fiduciary duty, like making sure that you know how their finances are, that the organization is paying their employees, paying their bills.
A little bit of due diligence there.
Yeah, right? The due diligence, making sure they're spending their donations and foundation grants in the way that they were intended to. And really holding, you know, each other on the board and holding the staff and the executive director accountable. So that's just some pieces. That is not at all to scare anybody away from board duty, but it's also to give a little light as these are things that people have to consider, and you all can do it.
Sure. And I think there's so much to be said as well for some of these organizations that have been around supporting the community. Some are newer. And then there are many that have been well established that even have endowments and things that, whether it's, you know, a scholarship fund or they're raising money to build a special memorial or, you know, so there's a lot to be considered with the timeline, setting expectations, communication with the constituents. And again, what you said earlier, holding each other accountable. And I think that's wonderful. That's great. So, Heather, with our last minutes together today, I thought maybe we would tie all of this together with something that I guess I just said upon. Let's talk about ties.
Our last T is ties. So, you know, it kind of encompasses a lot of what we just talked about. But when I think about that, the T of ties, that is helping the nonprofit share their message, share their mission, and also bring more people who want to be involved, more supporters. So it's really sharing your network with the organization, sharing your organization with your network. So that could be social media posts, right? So your connections see what you're involved in. That's a great way to get the word out as to other organizations, and people want to support what their friends and colleagues and family members support, or at least learn more about them. It's also, you know, when we think about other time, right? There's people that might be looking for some volunteer time. They may, again, they may have time. They're a plumber. They're a licensed plumber, and they want to be able to help out a nonprofit. And if you can put out there that you're involved in something and they're looking for a plumber, that's a good way to help that organization. Also bringing your colleagues, your neighbors, your friends, your family to their events, whether that's a get to know you event, whether that's a fundraising event, that's another great way to get other people to just know about the organization and to see where their involvement may want, where they may want their involvement to go. And you know, you had mentioned Milwaukee's philanthropic community radio show that Ellen Becker has once a week. That's, I think of that as a way that Ellen Becker is sharing their ties, right? Really using it to get, using that show as a way for small nonprofits to get their word out to many, many, many people.
Absolutely. And sponsorships, you know, getting people, getting the word out there. I love what you mentioned. I recently was part of an activity we small board were on, had a meat raffle, and
yes,
I had no idea how those worked or anything, but we invited a bunch of great contacts. You know, I had some family show up and they had a great time.
Yeah, for sure.
We raised a lot of money.
Right,
for
and
a
that
good
all
cause.
Helped, and you had a great time, and your family had a great time. That just makes it even better.
So I think that's more of a Wisconsin thing.
meat raffle. I love it. But, you don't hear about those too often anymore.
Let me ask you. I just kind of thought, you know, maybe bringing all this in. You know, what are a couple thoughts that you have around how people should think about this in their planning?
Well, and that's, you know, when we think about everything we just talked about, that's like the now. But yes, there was some longer term planning about, you know, what to do when you're 70 and a half. And there was the donor advised fund that's like building a kitty of funds that you can use for charitable donation down the line. I reference that can be part of your legacy plan. Mm-hmm. But most of the four T's is like warm hand, right? You're still alive. It's really important to build and mold your philanthropic goals for your estate plan, right? For when you're going to be gone. If that's important to you, one way to look at charitable giving is perhaps as someone once said, like, think of it as an additional child, right? So what do you want to leave to that additional child of charitable giving? That's a way to think of it. And maybe it's not what you have split across right. your kids or your family, but is that like another family member you want to take care of? And that's just a way to think of it, and then talk with your advisor, talk with your estate planning attorney to figure out the best way to fund charitable giving at your death. There's a lot of important tax strategies around that. Always keeping in mind that we all pay taxes on any income that we incur, meaning even if I incur income from an inheritance, like if it was an IRA, that charity never is going to have to pay taxes on an IRA they inherit from you. So again, there's some tax strategies yep. that are really important. You can think of it, you know, as a way, you know, there's ways that you can also, if you did fund like a donor advised fund, that's actually like pre-funding what your family would be able to give from you. So in a way, instead of carving out part of your estate to go to nonprofits directly, if you think about it along the way as I'm going to build up this charitable fund that then my, I'm just going to use an example of kids, then my kids become in charge of
right.
when I die. It's almost
it's
like
a great legacy.
Right. It's yeah. a great legacy. It's funding that additional family member of charitable giving that you want to fund.
Most
as
definitely.
A way to think of it.
In my experience, I found just with this concept that a lot of these discussions start around the table with, you know,
absolutely.
Family, with spouse, significant other, and then, you know, talking to your financial planner and talking with your attorney and tax advisor, because it just sometimes is way overlooked. People think about it, but they don't always take action, right? And I
right.
think what you're doing, you know, as we referenced earlier around the education piece, especially with nonprofits and with individuals, has been just such a good way to, you know, think about it, informing
exactly.
people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Getting the information out there. Well, that's great, Heather. So before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts or anything that you'd like to share with us today?
Thanks, Jamie. You know, I think it's really to assess how do you want to support nonprofits? And again, there's several ways to do it, and there you'll find the best way to start. And a start is a start. That's what you can do first, is do pick something to start with. Maybe it is looking at tax strategies. Maybe it is volunteering on a monthly basis at a nonprofit that you feel connected to their mission. And
wonderful.
Go from there. Mm-hmm.
We've been meeting with Heather Deaton, wealth advisor and certified financial planner with Ellen Becker Investment Group. If you enjoyed today's show and you'd like to learn more about EIG and upcoming events, please visit ellenbecker.com or give us a call at 262-691-3200. Money Sense airs on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. and then on Sundays from 12 to 1. As always, we hope that we've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being today. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.